four.
Yep.
Talbot 3 has included the four. So we have firmly stepped into that, the four.
Good.
And as the bench of three, when we established, we actually brought our mountains together. You could see them come together, and we decreed some things over the territory and over the spheres and the rounds.
Yeah.
Now it seems, because this four goes across, like I said, a ley line across the country, the Lord had me look at that latitude line and pinpoint the cities across the country. Then he had me do it around the world. So,
right.
You know, we're looking at the authority, you know, what we may carry and decree across the country as
yes.
ley line of four. And so now where we're at and we'll do today is as the four do the same thing, establish the four, you know, make the decrees, bring the mountains together, make the decrees and establish some things in the spirit realm. Does that sound right? What we
yeah.
should, you know, what we called it was like a dominion surge. You know, we got this
yes.
this plan, yeah. dominion surge.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds good. I think it's just recognizing when you have. A blueprint, and you're given the blueprint, and you establish the three, and then make the four, in terms of the four faces of God, connect so that you can establish that between heaven and earth. Then it's like, what mountains, what seven mountains does that blueprint engage? So you'll have seven mountains that have authority across
okay.
that area. What are they? And then you'll be looking then to see the connections in the kingdom. And I'm not saying that those have to be physical necessarily in one physical place, but they could be spheres of government over, I don't know, could be over family or worship or, you know, government or education. It could be any sphere. It doesn't have to be just a physical place. Then you're then looking for to establish those that are called to occupy those mountains
okay.
according to your blueprint, and then you will then see that each one of those mountains will have three, a bench on their three and a four, to then establish that, because let's say healing was one area that you felt called to, then you may have a mountain of healing, and you may find that you get connected with people whose main sphere of government is healing, so they become the bench of that mountain. And then that mountain will have seven other mountains of healing. So maybe physical healing, emotional, mental, healing rooms, healing, all sorts of different things. So essentially everything is then patterned after heaven in a smaller, and so everything looks like a pattern of heaven. Heaven is the big pattern, but when you look at it, it's broken down of many, many little patterns all looking the same. It's like a fractal image. And so then you establish government over those spheres, and your role is to, in a sense, bring the blueprints and the direction and the things, and to nurture and release other people into their roles, because then you become a foundation for that to be outworked. Now, you know, I'm not talking that necessarily happens instantly, but as you seek for the blueprint and you spend time in the presence of God around the ark, then the seven spheres of government that you have will be clearly released. And you probably know them already, or most of them anyway. But what you probably haven't thought about is, okay, we're three and a fourth to establish this order of Melchizedek to function, but you can't operate on every sphere of government.
No.
You govern and to release those spheres of government. So you'll then be calling forth those that are connected to your spheres to connect in the spirit. Yeah, maybe you'll come across them, or you'll connect with them, and you'll suddenly find they start talking about this calling and government, and you'll be like, wow, you know, And ultimately, then that can begin to change and transform how people begin to administer the kingdom, you know, out of heaven, through spiritual authority, all patterned after heaven and all continually to be outworked after those patterns. So, yeah.
Does it seem feasible too that, you know, with this ley line that God is also would establish a bench of three, you know, three just local people right here in this area to do the same over this region or the city? Does that make
sense? Okay. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Because in a sense, some people are called to a spiritual authority over, you know, across the earth or across US or whatever, but there will need to be physical expressions of that blueprint on the earth so that the shadow forms from the heavenly blueprint on the earth so that it can then be administered in apostolic and prophetic ministry of the four faces of God coming together, and then they release that ministry in reality. And so we would be looking for, God is looking for in reality, shadows. What has a heavenly blueprint and what looks like heaven that's administered with the government of a three and a seven? And then if there was a physical expression of that, whether it's an ecclesia or a ministry, but let's say it's an ecclesia, you would have a bench of three establishing the blueprint. You would have seven who are operating with the angel of the house, the fourth one, to establish that culture on the ground of the blueprint. And then that church or ecclesia would have seven spheres of government that they then have people ministering into, which are not necessarily the seven people who are the ones who are creating the environment of house, if you like. But that house has seven ministry functions. So you then identify those, and then you look to raise up people to occupy those, and then they have seven mountains. So eventually you see government is just happening on earth as it is in heaven all the time through physical expressions of that, and those people stepping into heaven and administering out of heaven, doing it a new way rather than an old way. But that's going to take a little bit of time to establish. But we need benches of three that are functioning in the heavens who have that call to call forth those blueprints, to call forth those places, those spheres of refuge, those places where there will be a physical manifestation of the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven, where when the shaking starts to take place of different things, where they're functioning as an embassy of heaven, where they're living under the rule of heaven, where they're not subject to the shaking because the kingdom cannot be shaken, according to Hebrews. So, yeah, we need to see physical manifestations of heaven on earth. And those become the beachheads to then establish that government spreading outwards, like Adam and Eve were called to subdue and have dominion. They're not places where we just protect. They're places where we begin to legislate and advance. So we take territory and we bring wider spheres of government under the government of heaven, where we begin to terraform and change the earth into an alignment of heaven in those areas that we're bringing that government in. So it's a whole different way of administrating the kingdom that we have to start with people who are called into authority in the heavens to begin to see this bigger picture of the blueprint, and then to facilitate calling those things into being. And actually, some people may never know that those people are ever doing it. They just may be benefiting from it, that the revelation gets released and they hear the sound of heaven and they get called to engage, and wow, we're starting to operate this. They may not know the people who are administrating that in the heavens, but that doesn't matter, because it's about being recognized in heaven rather than being recognized on earth, you know. So yeah, it's good. It's a lot of change coming, you know.
So the angelic realm works the same too. You have, because I've heard the three warring angels, prince warring angels over the country. So then there's three over states, three over cities, the same type of thing, right? That yeah. same network?
Yeah, and the same, they will have seven to outwork from, and, you know, there would then be the angel of each church house.
Okay.
You know, in terms of an actual angel assigned to each church, each ecclesia, it'll all be patterned after the same basic function. Yeah.
So there's a parallel, the man and angelic. Okay. Yeah. You said that there was another ley line that you knew, or a similar thing across the country. Do you remember what lateral? What?
I know. There's a group. A bench of three established along the 49th parallel.
Okay.
Which is between Canada and the US. So they're beginning to administer along that 49th parallel. So I guess that goes from sort of Toronto at one end right across to Vancouver, Seattle at the other end.
Right. I would love to connect with them. I mean, is that one of your mentoring groups? I mean, one of the groups
It is, yeah.
Okay.
Although now they've been established as a bench, that we're actually not publicizing the actual thing, but I can put you in touch with them.
Yeah, I'd love some advice and
I can definitely put you in touch with them. Yeah.
So. Okay. You know, the fourth you said is the angel of the house or the man, the one that seems really connected to the land. I had, you know, we had some questions because that person feels a calling to marry the land, and I've never heard of such. I mean, I didn't, you know, we have questions, you know, I've never heard of marrying the land. Have you?
I've heard that function, and in a sense, you know, I know that I've married the land here, that this is where God has called me, and there's a sense where I'm connected to it. I've invested into it. But if you think of the Old Testament prophets and some of the things God called them to do, for instance, he called Hosea to marry a prostitute, you know, and it's, wow, that's really weird. But it was a prophetic sign to Israel of Israel's prostitution with foreign gods, and so there are things that we're asked to do in the realm of the spirit to connect with that and to identify with it. It's really a form of identification. You know, I'm identifying with the sphere of government that I've been called to administer in, and then I'm connecting heaven and earth in agreement, because marriage is a covenant. So you're forming a covenant with God's purposes for that land, effectively, and coming into agreement for his purposes to be outworked in that governmental sphere. And people will have all different sorts of terminology for it, and because it will come out of how God connects with them. But there will be this connecting heaven and earth, and that's the key. Whether it, you know, be a physical sphere or a line of government, it will be a connection to it, because they will be more engaged with the how it gets worked out in the land, and how the land gets transformed, and how we terraform that land, and how that land gets restored back into original condition, and the people that are on that land, and how, you know, the city of refuge occupies that land, and that land is essentially heavenly land, because you've connected heaven and earth to connect that, so that it's the territory of heaven on earth. And to do that, you have to invest into it, you know, and marrying it is one way of seeing that I've made a covenant with this land for its blessing, and for the purposes of God to be released, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, we are finding, because we all have such different languages with God, but that's, you know, that's one thing that really has to work out. We have to understand how he speaks to each of us, that we're not talking, you know, foreign language to each other.
Yeah, sure.
That's kind of a challenge.
Yeah, but I think once you see things out of heaven, like when our bench of three steps in, we step in together, and then we come back out and we share from the perspective that we've each seen, and then we discuss that. What does that mean? So we see from each other's perspective and we explore the language. Because basically we come from usually a prophetic, an apostolic, and a kingly in our bench of three, and therefore we tune into and begin to share, to understand each other, to see the bigger picture, and then from that bigger picture, then we can then begin to see what is the strategy, and then often we step back in together, having seen the picture and understood the language, to then find out, okay, how can we then begin to administrate this? Once we now have understanding. And of course, the more time you spend with one another and the more time you communicate with one another, the more time, more you understand each other. And so you tune into the language and it becomes a way of understanding. And then you begin to find that you form common language because you'll begin to adapt the language that God begins to give you so that that is a way of understanding, because you'll form common language. You'll find out that once you get an understanding of you're saying this, you mean this, this is what this means, then you can use that meaning together, and it'll be helpful then, because you'll find that that common language will form. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it's almost overwhelming, the thought of what he's, you know, presenting us with. It's like, you know, God, who am I to be, you know, doing these and saying these things and making these decrees? But okay, you know, but it's interesting, and I am learning that there's not that urgency. You know, you get everyone's like in this urgent mood, you know, yeah. Their language. Oh, we got, you know, this is going on. You know, urgent prayer request, urgent, and I'm like, all of a sudden I just have this peace. No, you know, let's relax, let's see, let's see what this is about.
Well, that's it, because that's coming out of rest, and the government of God must come out of rest. You know, all those that are weary and heavy laden come to him and find rest, and everything flows out of that place of rest, and therefore security in our identity in God. Not having to perform, not having to be concerned with the thing of men, you know, the fear of man or all that stuff. And it's coming into an identity of sonship. You know, the whole slavery mentality they came out of Egypt with, they saw themselves as slaves because they were slaves, and even when they were set free, they still behaved as slaves. And so it is recognizing the authority that we have is not based in what we've done, but on the calling of God. And so we're not, you know, and in a sense, it's, yeah, God chooses and calls those that have a destiny in this area. It's not on what they've done, how much they've earned it, or anything else. It's on the calling of God. And so, yeah, there will be people that have no earthly recognition but are operating in massive levels of heavenly authority because they recognize their calling and their authority, and therefore they're not looking for earthly recognition. They only want to operate out of heaven, you know, and that will be those that are yoked to Jesus, learning from him because he's gentle and humble in heart. And that's the key. Matthew 11, 28 to 30 is a real key scripture there, because it's all about rest. And therefore, those who try and pressurize us, oh, you must do this. Oh, look at the state of the world. It's terrible. Everything's falling apart, blah, blah, blah. And it comes out of fear. It's fear-induced, and you can't produce anything out of fear. It will never produce faith in anything. It only produces fear and worry and anxiety, and that will never connect up with faith. So it's seeing when we step into heaven and see those things from God's perspective and see the bigger picture, we never need to be fearful. You know, we don't need to react out of a situation. We can respond out of God's purposes in each situation, and that's an important one to get hold of, because fear is what brings those things upon us, you know. So if we're fearful, we're only likely to bring the things that wouldn't have happened upon us unless we were fearful. So it becomes a self-fulfilling thing in our lives that creates fear, creates a manifestation that robs us of everything that God has for us. So everything must come out of rest.
You know, the Day of Atonement's coming up, and it's always been a very key day for me personally, but it seems that, you know, we've been given an assignment which we're preparing for in a few weeks leading up. And I'm just wondering, is it key to you? Is there something that you are sensing? No? Okay.
No. I personally, I have no connection with any of the Jewish feasts or days whatsoever. It's just not something that God's ever really called me to be involved in. I'm not saying that God can't use those days to speak to people. He obviously does. Mm-hmm. Is there a significance, actually? Well, actually, it isn't a Day of Atonement anymore because that whole old covenant system no longer exists.
Okay.
It's not in existence because the old covenant ended. You know, we're now in a new covenant. We have a better covenant, which is about the heavenly outworking of those things. So the symbolism of them, absolutely, what does it represent? And so God can use the terms to show us a representation of what that means in the new covenant. But we're not in the old covenant any longer. That old covenant ended. We're in the new covenant. But he can use anything in the Word of God to connect with us so that we have a connection with it. And so I have no issue with God using symbolism and things like that. He just doesn't speak to me in that way. So for me, I just go and talk to him. You know, so I just want to know what he says. You know, and I don't need symbolism for him to get through to me because I've developed a relationship, a face-to-face encounter. So he talks to me in the same language that I use, you know, and I don't use that sort of language, so he's unlikely to use that with me because it's not something I've ever really engaged in, because I've always seen that's old covenant, but has an application that we can see in our day, but is not actually there. I mean, there is no Day of Atonement. There is no sacrifice. The sacrifice has already taken place in Christ. That sacrifice is there every day. There's not a special day. Like, to be honest, I also don't really connect up with Christmas or Easter or any other festivals because they're just, to me, I live in the blessing of God every day. Are there times when sometimes you can connect up with other people in the world so you can connect them in some way? Yeah. So, you know, I've got no issue with any of those things. I just don't personally see any actual biblical significance in them because I don't see where it says to celebrate Jesus' birth. I celebrate Jesus' birth every day, as I celebrate his death every day, as I celebrate his life every day, and his ascension every day because I sit with him in the heavenly places. So a lot of things becomes a real living relationship in what I do rather than the symbolic nature of things. But God can speak through it to people, and I don't have any issue with that. Just not personally with me anyway.
He tends to always, it was this time last year when he just said he was asking me to take more responsibility and authority, and he sort of, you know, me down this direction, and so I'm anticipating, you know, he does choose Kairos moments, you know, like my birthday is another key time where he does something special and just...
Oh, yeah, I mean, there are times and seasons, and God uses times and seasons, and he speaks to us in time. I mean, basically, usually in the middle of the year, in June, I tend to have a download of Revelation. Usually in December, I have a download of Revelation.
Yeah.
I seek God for it. It's the season when God seems to speak to me. I wouldn't ever say that's the time God is going to speak to anybody else, but he speaks to me at that time, and I really embrace what he says, and I am open for that. I think times and seasons are in how God works with us, and there are certain times that are times that He gets our attention, you know, and if there are certain patterns that are repeated in that in our lives, great, you know, because then we look for them and we're open for them, and that's great, you know. I'm not sure how that works, but I know that God uses certain, sometimes He uses certain numbers to speak to people, and they keep seeing the certain number on a clock face, or they keep seeing 222 or 333 or 2123, and God uses those symbols and times and numbers to connect with us, you know, to get our attention. And that's what He's looking for. He's looking for our attention so that we're listening. And if it's a season that usually speaks, you know, I'm more likely to be out looking for revelation in December and June, because that's been a pattern in my life, you know. But I also want to make sure that I'm not going to miss any other things of communicating with God. I want to be open every day, you know, because it's a relationship. And, you know, I don't want to just connect with God in June and December. You know, I want to make sure I'm connected every day. But there are seasons sometimes that God gives that. And there are sometimes seasons that actually seem like He's not saying anything at times, you know.
Dry seasons, I hate those. I cry out, Lord, what's up? But, you know, He did say to me very clearly, and that was last August. Again, it was a year ago. He said that He was taking, you know, what He does with me, take me up, and, you know, the night watch and stuff, that He was taking specific groups together, groups from the earth together up on assignment. So it's just interesting watching these things happen. I thought it was more of, you know, let's go fulfill this, you know, fulfill this assignment. I had no anticipation of this, and no idea of this pinch of three and all of that. So it's,
yeah, but that's, you know, that's really been established a lot in the last year. I mean, in December, you know, I had a vision of the world, and I was taken out into the solar system. I was shown the world. It was spinning, and then it stopped spinning. And then I saw all these lights appearing over the world, and then the world started spinning in a different direction. And, you know, that did, obviously physically that didn't happen, but in the spirit realm, something changed last year. And it was about establishing government so that things could turn in a different direction. And so, you know, the lights I saw when I asked, what are they? He said, they're benches of three. And he said, you have a role in establishing them. So I'm like, okay. So then I had to take the world and put it into my heart and then carry it in a different way. And since then I have. You know, this year I have carried that call to engage and see benches of three established and government established in a much stronger sense, because I was called into it, you know. So I know that we're in very significant times for government to be established.
It's like He's building, you know, tell me, He's building this network. It's actually a fine net.
Yeah.
And these connections, small connections, you know, that are going to cover the earth. And that these benches of threes, I mean, there's actually going to be a connection or point of connection with all of them, too. I mean, just building and covering the earth with a net. So it's interesting watching it. And I don't know how long this process seems like it's going to be a long process, but, you know.
Things can speed up. I mean, a lot has happened in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
12 months ago, I'd never ever mentored anybody online.
Yeah.
So in 12 months, this whole thing has opened up. Now, how I see it, God showed me a number of times. I've had the same vision. I see like pillars of fire And those pillars of fire go into the atmosphere and they connect up to form a canopy of fire which purifies the atmosphere and brings new government. And I think it's the same basic thing as what you're saying. These connections forming to establish government, this canopy, this network of connections in the spirit, absolutely is what I think is what God is doing. And I do believe that there will be councils of 12 and councils of 70, which is again another pattern of heavenly government, which we're working on the threes and the fours and the sevens. But here we have a council of 12 that we're working with, which provides government in a wider sense to all our ministry. And I believe we're going to see that there will be benches of three that have one of their bench assigned to a council of 12, which has greater governmental authority over a region or wider. And then there will be councils of 70, probably over nations, which is representing the galactic council, which is in heaven. You have the elders, two lots of 12 elders. You have the 12 foundations to the city of Jerusalem. 12 is the number of government, in that we are in government with God, patterned after heaven on earth. So I expect councils of these connections to be made in the times coming. I'm not saying it's going to happen immediately, but you will start to see that revelation release, and you'll start to see God joining the people together and connecting those people together in these wider spheres to cover regions, nations with governmental authority, and ultimately nationally and internationally. Because again, it needs to be patterned after that which is in heaven.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is a key year. I mean, with the passing of Ariel Sharon, which exploded in his key, and then Bob Jones and now Arthur Burt, all the prophecy surrounding their life, it's exciting to see them, that something has begun. Something big has really begun.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think personally, 2015 is going to be a very significant year. It's 40 years since the Bob Jones prophecy of the billionfold harvest. I think God's given a 40-year generation to respond. Most of them haven't. And I think next year there's going to be a line drawn, a fiery line drawn, and judgment coming to the household of God, and God saying, who is going to enter into the land? Who is going to take hold of their inheritance? Who's going to leave the old of the wilderness behind? However, miracles and mighty things happened there, and embrace a new way in the kingdom, and embrace the order of Melchizedek, let go of the fivefold order, embrace the order of Melchizedek, and then we're going to start to see a separation of that which is God and that which is not of God, and God's glory will start to leave the old, and the new will start to really start to springboard forward in a huge dimension of power. And I think that line is going to be drawn next year. I didn't see the significance with the 40 years until this year, but 3 years ago God really spoke to me about a 3-year period of preparation, needing to be ready, needing to be able to be ready to receive what was coming in terms of judgment, and so that ultimately be ready to receive the harvest that begins to come in the future. And that's why I want to raise up this Joshua generation, be part of it. That's why I want to mentor people in how to disciple others in these supernatural dimensions of the kingdom. The whole engaging God manual is all about that engagement with this generation and the next. And you want people to come out of the wilderness, but a whole group of them chose not to. And they chose to stay in the old. And, I don't want people to stay in the old, but we have to embrace the new. And I think the Joshua generation's call has to be, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And that's all I'm responsible for. As me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. You choose who this day who you will serve, and I really believe that line is going to be a choice for people. choose you this day who you will serve. And it's going to be a powerful line. Fire. It's a fiery sword. And some people will withdraw from that fire, and some people will embrace the fire and go through it and enter into another dimension in the kingdom. So, powerful.
You know, it's interesting, too, the age demographic. I would have thought that more of the youth would be grasping this, but it really is, it's this, our age, this, yeah. And that's surprising me. And then, too, with this, the prophecy of the billion youth coming in, you see...
But that was not what was prophesied.
Hmm?
It wasn't prophesied. That was picked up by IHOP, and they began to focus on the youth. It was never prophesied that it was just going to be youth. It was it's a harvest, and therefore it's a united generation of the next generation that's going to come in and embrace their inheritance. It was never youth, and I think the youth thing has deflected away from the reality of what was prophesied, and therefore so many people have not embraced that. And therefore, the mentors aren't in place for that next generation because people have not embraced it. And again, some of it is because they saw that as being the end, they didn't see that as being the beginning. This is a harvest of harvesters for the end. This is a new beginning, not the end. And so a whole eschatology around, this harvest is coming in, and then just it, Jesus is going to come, and that's the end of it. Has not caused people to embrace. We have to sow into this, and we have to be ready to mentor these. It was almost like, the harvest will come, that will be it, forget it. No preparation, and they've missed, a whole generation have missed what it is to embrace that harvest that's coming, and to be ready and prepared to mentor that generation so that they will be ready for the next huge harvest at the end of the age. That's my view, and I think there's been misinterpretation of those prophetic words that have deflected away from the purpose that God intended them to have, which will be get ready for this harvest. Get ready. Not just, this harvest is coming and then Jesus will return. And again, that always deflects away from what God wants us to do.
So the billion are the harvesters of the harvest. Yeah. Is that the billion? Yeah.
That's the harvesters.
Thanks for that correction. Yeah.
So we need to be ready to mentor those harvesters. So how many people do we need to mentor a billion people?
Yeah.
And quite a lot.
Yeah.
So there needs to be a lot of mentors that God's going to raise up in this generation, this Joshua generation, into what God is calling us to engage in the future. And I think... Again, people interpret their prophetic things that God speaks through filters that can miss the point of what the word was, and 40 years later, there's only forerunners who've engaged, and there should have been a whole generation that engaged, but only forerunners have engaged, and we've got to, get those forerunners to really embrace what the calling is for their lives, and it's really important in God's economy right now, I believe.
I want to thank you too, because understanding that whole forerunner, but now recognizing the forerunner, having those forerunner experiences where sovereignly I was taken and shown many things, I thank you that now I do see by faith is the mature way. And trying to mentor the by faith generation, so many want the forerunner, take me. No, the mature way is by faith. It's taken me a long time to establish that. Thank you for telling me that.
Okay. Yeah. I remember. That's part of the call that God's given me is to release this sound, if you like, and encourage people and help people to embrace it. You know, to see what their destiny is as part of this, as part of this generation. You know, and, you know, therefore you're right when it comes to a lot of the people who are embracing this call to be a Joshua generation are older people. Well, it makes sense, because you have to have been through the wilderness to recognize what a Joshua generation is. You know, the generation that's coming who will be saved won't have been in the wilderness. You know, they will have crossed. You know, and I think that's what we need to see. It's like, yeah, we're representing Joshua and Caleb, but there's a whole generation who are going to be birthed into. And the sort of prophetic word that brings this is Joseph and the storehouses. There were 7 years of blessing in which the storehouses were full, and those were 20% of the harvest were brought into storehouses. And then they had 7 years of famine, in which it says the whole world came to the storehouses of Egypt. And I see that the harvest that's coming of harvesters is the 7 years, and then we've got to be ready. So the storehouses are the places that will embrace the harvest of harvesters as a storehouse of provision and protection, as a city of refuge, if you like, that will equip them. And that generation that comes in to be equipped is all ages. It's not just young people, you know, and we have to realize that the world is going to come to us because we have the answers, that we have the government, that we have the health, that we have the provision, we have the protection and the blessing, because we have seen 20%, you know, because they took 20% into the storehouse. So I believe 20% is about a billion in terms of world population. You know, and so we're going to see places where cities of refuge are established on the earth that will see 20% of the population around them come in as harvesters. So there will be a great harvest, but we must never lose sight that that is just the harvesters that need to be equipped to live a supernatural dimension and to take their heavenly and earthly inheritance and then begin to manifest that on the earth. Because that's the purpose of God, that then we would then begin to take ground. You know, we would then go out and take territory and expand those cities of refuge. They're not just going to be places that are protected from what's going on. They are places where we're going to expand out from and begin to take authority and to take new ground, and to see that ground under the government of God as well. Fulfilling Adam and Eve's mandate. For me, it's a fulfillment of the original mandate to subdue and to bring dominion, to bring heaven onto earth. Exciting opportunities coming.
Do you know of a prophecy that lists more, you know, those cities of refuge? I mean, I know of a few. I know there are some individual prophecies saying this is the city of refuge, this is the city of light, et cetera, et cetera. But do you know of one?
Because I think in a sense it hasn't been written yet.
Okay.
Because we get to establish it. So I think a lot of the prophetic stuff, I know Ian Clayton's message is from the end of 2012, the prophetic stuff into the future stopped.
Right.
Can't see into the future in that way, because now there's a new order being established to establish the future out of what was, to see into God's original intention, into what was, to bring that into what is, to then write what will be out of what was. So we need to look into what was, not look into what will be, because that will only become what will be if we come out of what was, if you like. And so I totally accept that, as we need to be now looking to establish. So I don't believe anyone could prophesy what those cities of refuge are, because people like you and those who are establishing benches of three are going to call them into being. And They may well have been prophesied out of God's purpose in eternity, but we need to make sure and look into eternity to see where those things are, so that we can call them into being and see their establishment on earth as it is in heaven.
Yeah, that, you know, that kind of explains some strange things, like in court, how I've seen destiny scrolls being brought in and then added to. But it's like the seven spirits would come up and add different things to scrolls, which I thought were already written, you know. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting that you can have more things added to your scroll.
But you can, if your scroll is not, if the scrolls that are associated with blueprints for these things are not yet written, then we get to write them. So some of the legislative government that comes to sonship is that we get to write some of these scrolls. Adam and Eve were given this mandate and this thing. It's like they named the animals. Adam named the animals, and the animals formed out of his name. What are we going to name in our area? That's why being married to the land is important, because we will name the land out of God's purpose and intention for the land. Not out of history, but out of eternity, will we name the land and see the land transformed around the name that we bring out of eternity for it, which will be terraforming it according to heaven. So it's a totally different dimension. The whole prophetic is a new order. You know, apostolic prophetic government from the order of Melchizedek is not the same as the fivefold ministries. It's a new order, which we have to establish it in new ways of engaging with eternity to then bring the fullness of God's word and then bring the government of God's word to form that word on the earth out of the connection between earth and heaven. So,
and good stuff. Oh my goodness, I mean, just church, even the whole face of the church and the church building, the church gathering, it's just so completely changing. I mean, it's just like I can't go to any old meeting anymore. I just can't go. I just have no desire. But I can get on and connect across the country and talk about these things with great excitement, you know. So, I mean, just everything is changing.
It is indeed. Everything's changing. Which is great. Who wants to stay the same?
I mean, you go to a big, huge artisan, gathering of the artisans, and everyone there is mature, my age. You would think kids, but no. You know, there's a splattering here and there. You know, 90% are, you know, 50 and older. I'm like, oh, this is really striking.
Yeah. But those are the people who have the time to hear the sound.
Yeah.
They're not concerned about getting their university degrees, getting their new houses, getting their new cars, getting their businesses established. They've actually gone through that, and they've realized that that isn't the answer. It doesn't solve the problems. We need to engage heaven. And so we're at a place, if you think that we're at a place where we're looking at, hey, is my life going to be just more of this, or is there something new? I want to make my life count.
Yeah.
I want the rest of my life. If, you know, in fact, I don't want to die. I want to usher in everything that's going to come. So there's a whole different dimension that comes when you're at that place where you're open to hear and you're not focused on creating your, you know, establishing your life on earth.
Yeah.
And buying into the dream of it's going to be okay if you get more money and more this and more that and more the other. Actually, we need to look into the heavenly purposes and realize it's not about earthly possessions. They all belong to God anyway. Let's not waste time trying to get things to make ourselves feel better. Let's engage with God, who will give us all we need in Him. And if we seek first the kingdom, all those things will be added anyway. We don't need to worry about what we're going to wear, what we're going to eat, where we're going to live, because He says, if you seek first the kingdom and my righteousness, I will deal with that stuff. We need to raise a generation of people who are going to be seeking first the kingdom and His righteousness, and God's provision will be made for them. They will not have to go out there and try and make it. You know, God will provide when they seek first His kingdom. And that's a key. You know, it really is. Into what we're going to do, we need a whole different economy in terms of seeking the kingdom and trusting God for his provision, protection, blessing, everything we need, and holding to it. He promised, seek first the kingdom and everything else will be added. So let's hold him to that promise and let's seek the kingdom, not seek the kingdom of this world.
Yeah. Another really interesting phenomenon, you know, I'm charged with the care of my little grandchildren, and it is interesting that when I gather and we go up, they just come, you know, little one climbs in my lap and settles down, and she's like right there wanting to go, and I think, you know, she just settles right down and goes up, and I think the wee ones are picking up on, I don't know, the frequency or whatever, but they just, gather around. That's interesting.
Because they're not yet shaped by the world. That's why we need to invest into what's coming, really. You know? And those will be the next generation, but they just won't only be those children. There will be people through a united generation that will hear, they will see what's coming, you know, because they'll see it in that the church raised up as the mountain of the house of the Lord, you know, so it's good stuff. Okay.
Well, I'm excited about the training. I'm glad that, you know, the module is out, and, you know, so it's like every 6 weeks or so, right?
Thereabouts, I guess. I mean, the first one really is just to bring everyone up to speed, so everyone's in the same place, got the same basic foundation of understanding Joshua Generation and where we're going with it, and then we'll go to base camp and really look about building a spirit and practicing, engaging, how to build our spirit, how to see in the realm of the spirit, that basic stuff, and then set off on the journey, you know, and begin to outwork what we've learned in practical engagement with our spirit, soul, and body, and this first love gate, and engaging into heaven, and then hopefully ultimately on into kingdom government and establishing that. But, you know, but we have to find a way of being able to mentor anybody without any knowledge into how to live this way. And so having a systematic journey to follow, I think, is the way. Even though a lot of people will be more advanced, the people that they will be coming across won't necessarily be. Therefore, we have to find a way of engaging them, which is why we need to understand the process and the journey. But it'd be good. So, yeah.